Okay, big screen time. That means big Paul Whittington time. Paul Whittington, tell me what's happening on the big screen in terms of cinema this weekend.
A funny enough week, Dave. Nothing huge, but a couple of interesting things. A Private War, which you've probably heard about.
Yeah, I mean, I would have read some of her stuff on the Sundays and the Times, all right, down to the US, because you'd know her with the thing on the eye.
The eye patch, yeah. She loves the eye in Sri Lanka. She is the legendary sort of Sunday Times war correspondent who, you know, fearlessly went to all sorts of conflict zones, Iraq, Sri Lanka, as I mentioned, all over the place, and Syria. And in fact, she died in Syria in 2012, as people might remember, in Homs. She went into Homs to give the lie to Assad's claims that he wasn't targeting civilians.
And very weirdly this week, or only in the last 10 days or so, it's been proved like that she was completely 100% targeted and therefore murdered.
Yes, yeah, yeah. This film, it doesn't set out to be a biopic in a way. The film's director, Matthew Heineman, has sort of said that really what they wanted was an accumulative kind of feeling of the experience of seeing war, which Mary Colvin would have gone through. So we don't really get much backstory. We meet her in sort of, I think it's in the early 2000s. She's about to go to Sri Lanka. Her work is her life. Her private life is a bit of a mess, and she, you know, she drinks a lot and she smokes, and she lives this high voltage lifestyle. And like a lot of other people who got involved in that business, she has become in some sense addicted to the high adrenaline of combat, or rather finds its absence difficult.
The addiction to the high adrenaline of these things. We've seen that before often. I think, was there a movie with Gene Hackman called Under Siege? I can't remember what the title was. It was that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it was called Under Siege. Yeah.
All drinking in a bar, and then they hear about a bomb going off 2 miles and they just run off.
Yeah, and also maybe The Killing Fields in a way and all that kind of thing. It's Sidney Shamberg. It's, I suppose in one way it's quite a focused film because it does that. She... we see her go from place to place. We see her struggle when she's away from it and get drawn back. Even we see the instance in which she lost the eye in Sri Lanka when she was embedded with the Tamils. And that would be enough for most people. She gets an award, but she hates the award ceremony. She wears the eye patch, as you say, and off she goes again. She needs to go back. And in part of it is that she does want to bear witness to war's effect on ordinary people, the people who suffer in wars. But there's also this impulsion to walk towards the gunfire, as it were. Jamie Dornan, gamely doing his best to suppress his Belfast accent, plays Paul Conroy, this Liverpudlian photojournalist who teamed up with her, I think, first in Iraq and then went to Syria with her and was in Homs with her when she died. That sort of climax of the film, which is Homs, is actually really well photographed and put together, and you really get a sense of that, just that nightmare of this doomed city just collapsing around everybody's ears. That's good. And Rosamund Pike, who I probably haven't mentioned so far, is really throws herself into this performance, which is not what you'd expect from her, and she's very good in it. The problem I have with this film is that her suffering seems tinny because it doesn't really have a context. We don't get a sense of her backstory, of her upbringing at all, or why she might have been impelled to do what she did, and that's a problem in the film for me.
It's not enough for you that this is just how she is taken.
No, it isn't. I mean, I do admire the idea of giving, you know, this you know, a sense of accumulating damage you know, when you see things you can't unsee, but I don't think it's enough.
Okay, but you are saying that her sincerity in wanting to shine a light on pointless human suffering is absolutely 100% genuine.
Oh, 100%. And that comes across. Yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah. You're a remarkable person, actually.
Right, and a very good portrayal in the movie. Okay,
yes.
It's not a biopic or a biopic or whatever you want to
call it. No, not as such.
Okay, it's called A Private War by Rosalind Pike. Okay.
Yeah. An interesting film.
Thumbs up.
Very different kind of film. Instant Family. A Hollywood comedy that is good, which is an extremely unusual thing, as you know. And this comedy, basically it stars Rose Byrne, who I think is great at comedy. I think she's really good.
Yeah, she was kind of the protagonist. Would that be the right word? Almost in Bridesmaids, that kind of thing.
She was. Yes, she was. Yeah, she was at the middle of it. She was kind of the straight person in that. But she's very good. Her and Mark Wahlberg plays this couple who don't have children. They just haven't really got around to it, and they're not sure if they want to. Then they decide to adopt, which would appear to be easier in America than it is here. And so they basically do this course, and then they end up at these bizarre parties where you meet kids who've been in foster homes, and you go around and sort of take your pick a kid type of thing. I'm sure it's slightly more complicated than that in real life. And bravely, because nobody wants to go near the teenagers, obviously, because all the damage has been done by the time they're teenagers, they go over and they take a shine to this girl called Lizzie, who is very bright. She's a bit chippy. They don't realise she comes as a package. She comes with two younger siblings, a very shy and awkward 10-year-old boy, and this 6-year-old little girl who is really almost feral, like she's very hard to govern. They take all this on, so suddenly, as the title says, they have an instant family. They've no idea what they're letting themselves in for. It's actually very funny, this film, and both her and Rose Byrne and Wahlberg, their comic timing is very good. And Mark Wahlberg's character says all the things you're not supposed to say because he's a new parent, like he compares children to dogs and so on and so forth. But the clever thing it does is that it also discusses this issue, like, you know, these brave people who take on, who foster kids from very difficult backgrounds, not knowing what they're going to have to deal with, and it manages to keep all the balls in the air, as it were. It's a very nice film. You know?
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah. All right. Thumbs up for that one too. Called Instant Family.
Yeah. No colons this week, unfortunately, Dave. Happy Death Day to you. Do you remember Happy Death Day, Dave?
I remember there was one. I didn't see it, and I've seen the ads for this all over the television, and I won't be going to see it. And in fact, I never liked the Scream movies either, so there's something wrong with me.
No, there's nothing wrong with you per se. Well, not in that regard anyway. The Happy Death Day was very overpraised. It did huge business. It was made for about, I think it was made for about 5 million, and it made about 140 million, it grossed about 140 million. And it was clever in the sense that it combined the idea of Groundhog Day with the Scream movies and sort of created something funny. And the main character in it is played by Jessica Roth, Tree or Teresa. She's a college student. She's very self-absorbed. And she keeps waking up on the morning of her birthday and then getting murdered by this man and a baby, or this person in a baby mask at the end of it. And she's in a time loop, but she needs to get out of it.
There's a lot of that going on. Russian Doll at the moment.
It hasn't happened to me recently, but there is actually. That's right, on Netflix. I noticed that. Yeah. In this,
what
so
was the Drew Barrymore one? Was it 51 dates or something? Or I don't know. She lived the same.
Sounds familiar, but I'm not sure.
I can't remember.
But this is a sequel to that.
Adam Sandler.
This is a sequel to that, so that's a problem, because obviously, are they going to do the same joke again? Yes, they do. But this time, she's stuck in a slightly different time loop where her dead mother is alive again. In other words, sort of parallel universe type thing. And but she's not going out with the person she's fallen in love with in the first film, so she has to make a choice between her mother and which I would have thought was simple, but there you go. And there's also this kind of time machine aspect which drags in a sort of Back to the Future feel to it, lots of jokes, but it's too it trips over its own sort of cleverness. It's okay for a while, but then it forgets that it's supposed to be scary as well, and it really isn't scary at all. So it's not, the first one I thought was overpraised, but it was all right. This is not quite as good as that.
But maybe it's not meant to be scary. Maybe it's so tongue-in-cheek.
I think it
no
was meant
scary.
To be scary as well. Right. But that's effectively what happens, as you say.
Okay.
Yeah.
Happy Death Day to you.
Yes.
As opposed to, well, presumably the first
to
was
you
called.
Too. Yeah.
Happy Death Day was the first one.
Happy Death Day.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Never saw it. And I won't be seeing this. Go on.
No. The kid who would be king, Joe Cornish. Do you remember the aliens on the block? Remember that thing about these unfortunate extraterrestrials who had the great misfortune to land in a tough South London council station, got their asses kicked. Joe Cornish made that, and then he went to Hollywood and made a few other things. This has already opened in America, and it's been, the critics liked it, so do I quite like it, but it's done terrible over there, so it probably won't do the business here either. Some things just don't appeal. I quite liked the idea of it. It sort of it sets the Arthurian legends in sort of modern Britain, and it may be a metaphor for Brexit, Dave, because the little boy in it, who's actually played by Andy Serkis's son, his name is Louis Ashbourne Serkis, and he's very good. He plays this little boy called Alex, and as he's going to school, he's not having a nice time at school, he's being bullied, and we get this sense that Britain is in dire trouble. It's heading for a cliff. They don't say Brexit, but that's what I took from it. And Alex is not having a happy time until he sees this ancient sword in a breeze block, pulls it out, and he is the incarnation of King Arthur. So he makes his enemies his friends, as it were, and he sets off on this quest to foil Morgana, who ought to have been played by Jacob Rees-Mogg, but he wasn't available. So she's played by Rebecca Ferguson. She's this ancient, the ancient half-sister of the original Arthur who wants to destroy Britain for reasons best known for herself. It's actually, the tone of it's quite nice.
I'm not getting it totally. Is this a kind of a nice, breezy comedy thing, or is it easygoing kind of drama?
No, it's not. It's not a comedy. It's an action film which revives the Arthurian legends, basically. So they are chased by skeletal knights and so on around Britain as they try to solve their problems. And I thought it was quite nicely done, but it sounds like people aren't going to go and see it, but I thought it was quite nice.
Okay, that's The Kid Who Would Be King. Happy Death Day to You is the one before that, and the other two are Instant Family and A Private War, and I would imagine thumbs up for both of them, with certain reservations both times, but basically thumbs up.
Yeah, Instant Family, definite thumbs up for you.
All right, listen, Paul Whittington from The Independent. Thanks a million, Paul.
Thanks, Dave.